Good afternoon. Welcome to the second Wales Governance Centre podcast. My name is Richard Wynne-Jones. I'm director of the centre, and I'm joined by two friends and colleagues, Manon George, who works in the centre, part of Cardiff Law School, and Emyr Lewis, who's a very eminent practitioner here in Cardiff. And we're going to be focusing on the Human Rights Act, which the new UK government wants to repeal, and the implications for devolution. So let me start with you, Emyr. Can you give us some context in terms of the Human Rights Act? What is it? Where does it come from?
Well, after the Second World War, in the face of the appalling things that happened there in terms of people being killed and maimed and their property taken, it was decided that some international norms were needed, an international convention was needed, some international law which protected people's fundamental rights. So the European Convention of Human Rights was created, drafted largely by British lawyers, although others were involved as well, which creates a series of fundamental rights and a scheme of enforcing and interpreting those rights. It's been added to with various protocols over the years. And what the Human Rights Act did in 1998, the Tony Blair government decided that it would incorporate the convention rights into the law of England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, but it was incorporating the rights into the law of the UK, if you like. With the consequence of that is that these rights were then enforceable by UK citizens in UK courts.
So without going to Strasbourg.
Without going to Strasbourg. There was a way in which they were sort of enforceable before then, right. But this made the way in which the human rights, the convention rights as they're called, informed the whole of public life much stronger.
Okay, so I've got a cool fact here, Emyr. I think in terms of the people who drafted the convention, as I understand it, one of the key people in the process was David Maxwell Fyfe, who then went on to become Minister for Wales before the establishment of the Welsh office, and was known apparently by the immortal nickname Die Bananas. So there's a weird Welsh connection here, yeah, to the convention.
It always is, and it's always weird, Richard.
So Manon, so turning to you, after the incorporation in the 98 Act, how fundamentally has this changed the way that law is practiced in the UK, that public bodies behave in the UK?
Well, it brought rights closer to the people in that they could enforce convention rights in domestic court instead of going to Strasbourg. And as well as that, the Human Rights Act put substantial duties on public bodies to act compatibly with convention rights. So local government and the government departments, and also the Scottish Parliament and the National Assembly for Wales have to act compatibly with convention rights.
So you're bringing us very neatly here to Wales and to the devolution dispensation. Now, we've heard a lot in the media in recent weeks about how the new UK government's plans to repeal the Act have an impact in terms of the Northern Ireland devolution dispensation, Scotland. We hear less about Wales. So how does the Human Rights Act relate to Welsh devolution?
Well, it relates to Welsh devolution in two ways. Firstly, the Welsh ministers have to act compatibly with convention rights in executing their duties, and the National Assembly for Wales, since receiving legislative powers, have to legislate compatibly with convention rights. So there's a restriction in the Government of Wales Act 2006 that the National Assembly must make acts of the Assembly which are compatible with convention rights.
So, Emyr, that sounds as if it's completely fundamental. It's part of the DNA in,
yes,
terms of how devolution works in Wales.
Well, it is, and Manon has referred to the way in which Assembly legislation has to comply with human rights, and that can pop up in odd ways. So, for instance, the latest case about the asbestos compensation case. One of the reasons that the Supreme Court found that to be outside the Assembly's powers was because it took away, strangely enough, the human rights of insurance companies to protection of their property. Very strange. It's strange,
yeah.
But it works that way. And this is in contrast to the way in which it would work if it was an Act of Parliament from London. an Act of Parliament of, from London, if it is in contravention of human rights, nevertheless remains law because Parliament is sovereign. The judge can give what's called a declaration of incompatibility, and that enables the minister, then the Secretary of State, to amend the law to make it compatible with human rights, but it doesn't undermine the law. In Scotland and in Wales and in Northern Ireland, laws which are made there are completely void if they contravene human rights. So it really is that serious. You know, you can go to court being prosecuted for something, and your lawyer says, this law under which you're prosecuting me is in contravention of human rights. And if the judge agrees, then the whole law is made void and the whole prosecution is made void.
Okay, so what you're both saying is this is absolutely fundamental to the way that devolution has been designed.
Yes.
In a sense. Okay, so we've got the new UK government has decided it wants to repeal this legislation. You know, why, Emyr? What's the problem? What's the problem with the Human Rights Act?
There are various problems. Well, it seems there are various problems. The first one seems to be about the way in which it's basically anti-Europeanism. There is a bit in the Conservative manifesto that talks about abolishing the Human Rights Act, or scrapping Labour's Human Rights Act, as they say, as part of the rebalancing the relationship with Europe. A more fundamental one, perhaps, has got to do with an unease about the way in which the Strasbourg Court of Human Rights has interpreted certain cases involving the UK, in particular, in relation to extradition proceedings. Another strand that's running through here is about basically, you know, it's not very British, you know, despite the fact that on the one hand they say in another bit of the manifesto that they believe in universal human rights, nevertheless it seems that there's something un-British about this, which is those are the main things running through it. But if you look at what Michael Gove has said, for instance, you might say that it's just an assault on the process, an assault on the way in which the rights are litigated. But there seems to be some fundamental things there as well. For instance, bringing back the death penalty, which has been abolished, was only finally abolished in the UK after the passing of the Human Rights Act.
Okay, Manon, I'm a mere political scientist and I'm probably too simple to understand this. Okay, but we started off this conversation talking about the convention, which is from 1948, which has then been incorporated into British domestic law. What they're talking about is repealing the domestic legislation, but presumably at the moment we're talking about remaining in the convention, and as I understand it, we can then return to the situation pre-98 where people can take their cases ultimately to Strasbourg. So what would this achieve, or what am I missing here?
Well, exactly. Repealing the Human Rights Act would simply put us in the position that we're in prior to the Human Rights Act, so that citizens could go to the Strasbourg Court to enforce their human rights, just that they couldn't do it in courts in England and Wales. So we would still be party to the Convention of Rights, so people could still enforce their Convention Rights,
right,
but that they're just not incorporated in domestic law.
Okay, but I'm struggling to follow the logic of this, because if you're right in saying that one of the things that the Conservative Party is objecting to, apparently, is the deliberations of the Strasbourg Court, the Strasbourg Court would remain as relevant as it is now unless you pull out of the convention. Is that right, or what am I missing here?
Well, it's an interesting political dilemma, I think, because on the one hand, you know, if you accept there's such a thing as the law and that it's founded on the convention, then you have to have respect for the convention, and the convention says that the court is the arbiter on matters relating to rights.
Right.
So if you're going to be part of the convention, you have to accept to a certain extent the jurisdiction of the court.
Right.
Now, the issue for the UK, of course, is that it regards nothing as sovereign above Parliament, except actually for the European Court of Justice, which is a different court, which has to do with the European Union.
Yeah.
That is sovereign. But leave that to one side. So some way of mediating that will need to be found. Unless they're going to scrap the whole thing altogether, scrap the whole rights and say, we are no longer observing this convention, or we're only going to allow people to toddle off to Strasbourg if they want to, but we're going to pay no attention at all to what goes on there, and we can legislate in any way we like.
Then,
if the latter route is followed, then I suspect that it's going back more than before the Human Rights era. It's going back, the Human Rights Act era. Yeah. It's going back pre-convention. You're effectively saying we're going to leave the Council of Europe,
right.
And given the UK's UK's part in forming the Council of Europe, but also it liking to be seen as the good boy on the international human rights stage, then that would be a pretty dramatic thing for it to do.
But if we went back to, if we just went back to a pre-1998 situation, it would be no different to many other states in Europe where they are signed up to the convention but haven't incorporated it in domestic law. They haven't got a, an act. So, and in many of those states, what you'll see is that human rights is incorporated in a written constitution, something, of course, that we don't have.
Okay, but the Strasbourg Court is still relevant in those cases as well.
Exactly.
Okay, so, well, okay, I you know, as a mere political scientist, I'm struggling a bit with the logic of the UK government's position. But nonetheless, it's not for me to say, but I just have. Let's talk about the practicalities of this in terms of Wales and the devolution dispensation. Let's assume, and maybe we shouldn't assume, but let's assume that the UK government has the votes in Westminster, in both houses, to push this through. Given it's fundamentally built into the devolution system, could the governments in Scotland and Wales, or the legislatures in Scotland and Wales, resist this and refuse to go down this route? I mean, I understand that Northern Ireland is a world apart in many ways, but the devolution dispensation there is part of an international treaty, or is underpinned by an international treaty, so that's more complicated. But let's just focus on Wales and Scotland. If they have the votes to do it, can the National Assembly for Wales and the Scottish Parliament stop it happening, Emyr?
It depends whether you're talking legally or politically. If you're talking legally, then the strict answer is no, because, of course, Parliament is sovereign. Parliament in London is sovereign. So it could choose, if it wanted to abolish the Welsh Assembly and the Scottish Parliament. If you're talking in political terms, however, then it's a very different question, because we shouldn't forget that the human rights component within both the Welsh and the Scottish settlements, and indeed the Northern Irish ones, although I accept your point about being a bilateral treaty with which gave rise to that, the human rights components were part of what was voted on in the 2011 referendum in Wales and in the first 1997 referendum in Scotland. So they are cemented in, if you like, by popular will.
Okay.
And then, you know, switching from that sort of legalistic argument to the purely political one, is it really the case that they're going to be able to take away our rights in such crude terms, especially in Scotland?
But we could see the devolution acts being amended and the Human Rights Act replaced by a British bill.
But the amending is interesting. You raise a really interesting point there, Manon, because as I understand it, there is, again, we're talking about conventions, which are really important in terms of the British constitution and indeed in terms of how devolution works. Is there not a convention whereby the UK government doesn't change the powers of the National Assembly and the Scottish Parliament without consultation and approval from the devolved level, or is that not right?
The Sewell Convention provides that the UK Parliament will ask the consent of the devolved Parliament to legislate on something that has been devolved, or to change their powers. Whether they would take any notice of that vote is another question, because we have seen situations where the devolved parliaments have voted against, but the UK Parliament have gone ahead and legislated anyway.
Okay, but in terms of the politics of this, if Emyr is right in saying that it's part of the devolved dispensations voted upon in referendums, it would involve trampling over the Sewell Convention. The stakes are pretty high from a UK government perspective in terms of pursuing this. They could do it technically, but the stakes are high.
Well, yes, but I think it also depends what exactly they have in mind, and nobody's sure. Because on the one extreme, you may have those people who completely want to tear up the whole concept of European human rights and just have some what they call British rights, which would exclude, for instance, the right to life if you're condemned to death, for instance, as a sentence, would allow that punishment to take place. And on the other extreme, you've got people who probably just want a fig leaf, which is somehow or another mediating the relationship with the Strasbourg courts. And if that is all that were done, then you would probably, as Manon says, the amendment would be quite slight. The amendment needed would be quite slight because it would be exactly the same convention rights which existed. It's just the method by which they are enforced and maintained that slightly changed.
So that would mean, Manon, that in terms of what this means for the devolved dispensations, assuming that they've got the votes to do it, assuming that they just do it whatever the view is in Edinburgh and Cardiff, they just push it through, it's difficult to be clear about what the implications of this might be in terms of the day-to-day work of the Welsh Government and the National Assembly without knowing precisely what they have in mind in terms of replacing the Human Rights Act.
Exactly, and until we know whether it means leaving the convention or not. And there's also a question, like, can the National Assembly legislate on human rights? It's not a reserved subject and it's not a devolved subject. It's what we'd call a silent subject. And the same in Scotland. The Human Rights Act is reserved. They can't amend or repeal the Human Rights Act. But the law of human rights is not a reserved subject as such. So we could even suggest that the Scottish Parliament and the National Assembly could legislate on human rights themselves.
And develop their own human rights regime. That would be... Is that...
Well, arguably, yes. What they couldn't do, probably, even after the change, would be to have sort of less rights, but they might be able to enhance human rights protection. In fact, I don't see why they couldn't. And arguably, the Welsh Government's Welsh Assembly's already done that through, for instance, the children's rights measure. But what we mustn't forget is that this is the second time round for a Conservative government in London trying to get the Bill of Rights and scrapping the Human Rights Act. They set up a convention, the last government set up a convention, which had some really eminent lawyers on it, some of whom were fervent supporters of the convention, others who were fervent opponents of it. And they produced quite a very lengthy report. And while they disagreed about almost everything, the one thing they did agree about was bloody difficult. To do what they wanted to do and to get a British Bill of Rights. And one of the things which made it bloody difficult was those pesky Welsh, Scots and Irish who had got these things hardwired into their constitutional dispensations. And there's a whole chapter that deals specifically with that point. And it is acknowledged, I think, by both opponents and proponents of scrapping the Human Rights Act. That was a really difficult question, and they would have to and ah over, and one suspects that that is at least one of the ummings and ahings that's going on now, which is the reason why it's not in the Queen's Speech.
Okay, well, thank you. I hope you found that as enlightening as I did. I'm hoping that we'll be able to drag Manon and Emyr back soon to talk about the new Welsh devolution dispensation, English votes for English laws and other good things. So please join us again soon on the Wales Government Centre podcast. Diolch yn fawr iawn i chi gyd.